You're home from work and you've just made tea. Sitting down to eat and finally watch that Netflix show that everyone's been banging on about. You're sat there wondering whether you'd be better off watching Squid Game in its original language of Korean, rather than trying to get used to the almost comical dubbing. That's when the protagonist places a bet with a well-dressed, briefcase-wielding stranger in a subway station. Our main guy starts playing a game of something called Dakji, and you can't help but think, hang on, are they playing Pogs? Now, yes, the paper flip game these characters are engaging in is similar to our version, but with some differences. Let me explain. Pogs are small discs about 40 millimeters in diameter. Your collection would be obtained in many ways, but most commonly traded or won from an opponent. The method of play involved deciding on the number of pogs you were willing to wager. This would then be matched by your opponent. The discs would be stacked face down in a pile on the ground, and then you would take another pog, or often a thicker, heavier version called a slammer, and throw it, hitting the top of the stack. Any pogs that flipped over on your go, you kept. The remaining discs would then be restacked for your opponent's turn. This continued until no pogs remained. The player with the most pogs wins, and if you're playing for keeps, you both walk away with the pogs you won in the match. But due to discrepancies in the rules, sometimes the game winner takes all of the pogs wagered in the game, so they would leave with the entire stack. And this was one of the reasons that pogs were banned from schools. The pain of loss could often cause major tantrums, arguments, and even fights. Schools said that they not only caused problems in the playground, but were also a distraction to kids' learning and perpetuated child gambling. I guess pogs do kind of resemble casino chips, and nobody likes losing those. Teachers would claim that children no longer engaged in physical exercise during break times, which could be detrimental to kids' health and social development. They also said that a lot of time was now being spent settling disagreements from pog matches and trades, which took away teaching time. Okay, so where exactly did pogs come from? Menko is a Japanese game which was the original version of the slamming and flipping game that became pogs. It's been popular since the Edo period, and in case you don't know when that was between 1603 in 1867, and it was brought to Hawaii by Japanese immigrants in the 20th century. As the original Menko playing pieces were made from clay, ceramics, or wood, after their introduction to the island, many children started playing the game with milk caps as substitutes. School teacher Blossom Galbiso is the person credited for the reintroduction of the game back in 1991. After she taught it to her students. The children started collecting milk bottle caps to play the game then dubbed Milk Caps, and as the most popular ones were from Haleakala Dairy in Maui, the Canadian packaging company who made the caps began receiving large amounts of requests for extras. Okay, so just in case you aren't following, Milk Caps are the little cardboard discs that are located at the top of milk and juice carton lids. They act as a seal to prevent leaks. People would literally write to Stanpak, who are the Canadian company responsible for making the caps, and ask to place orders. Not to use in drink cartons, but to play the flipping milk cap game. Haleakala Dairy had a tropical juice that contained passion fruit, orange, and guava. The company named the drink for its ingredients, resulting in P for passion fruit, O for orange, and you guessed it, G for guava. Pog juice. Like the classic milk caps, pog juice tops were flat, round, and made from cardboard. This meant that they quickly became the replacement item for milk caps and helped form the game which was now evolving into the fad that we knew and were a part of. The craze was picked up by a man named Alan Rypinski. This businessman decided that money could be made from this fad, so he quickly snapped up the trademark Pog name from the Haleakala Dairy Company. He then formed the World Pog Federation and created the hairy dude with the toothy grin, known as Pogman, to be the company mascot. The World Pog Federation discs were covered in bright and eye-catching graphics that not only featured the classic Pogman adventure characters, but also characters from pop culture with third-party license pieces. Pogs not only had pop culture characters and images on them, but they also featured in TV and movies. Remember in The Simpsons when Milhouse trades Bart's soul for a stack of Alf Pogs?
Oh my God!
Okay, so we're going to take a little break, so hold on tight. We'll be back after these messages. I'm back just as promised, so let's get straight to it. The World Pog Federation is a California company, which has held the trademarks and copyrights to the Pog brand since 1993. The worldwide craze spanned from 1994 to 1998 and saw over 10 billion Pogs sold in 30 countries. The official Pog Unlimited website states that it reached 100 million kids aged between 5 and 12 during these 4 years. Now, the title of this episode is Pogs and Tazos, and the reason for this is because if you lived in the UK and played with Pogs as a youth, then you also likely played with Tazos. These were essentially alternative game discs that were from competing companies attempting to cash in on the craze. There are a bunch of other kinds too, but Tazos were the most prolific next to the originals. These became big as alternative to Pogs because they were essentially free. We all remember the days of getting toys and cereal, right? Well, a very well-known manufacturer of crisps, that's potato chips for all my friends listening in the US, they gave out free Tazos in their packets. This obviously was a bid to sell more crisps, because kids at the time were so desperate to get their hands on as many small collectible discs as possible. And most kids would be fine with owning the more available Tazos than the original trademark Pogs. But how exactly did Tazos come to be? In 1994, Pedro Pedierna was the vice president of marketing at Sabritas, a Mexican snack food company. He and his co-worker, Fabian de la Paz, used to collect soccer cards as children. Soccer cards which would come in packets of potato chips. Hoping to create a collectible with a similar success, Fabian informed Pedro of the milk cap craze that hit Hawaii in the 1930s, and the beverage company who had turned the fad into the Pog game and cap collectibles. The Canadian company who printed the original Pogs decided to resurrect them and saw an opportunity to license the campaign to other brands. Fabian saw Pogs at a promotions expo in the United States, and this is where he made a deal and brought Pogs to Mexico. There's a game in Mexico called Taco Nazos, which means heel of shoe. To play, you would remove bottle caps using your shoe heel and compete to see who could launch them the furthest. The game's name was often shortened to Tazo, and it was a hired advertising company that Sabritas outsourced who decided to use this as the name for the new collectibles. After securing the rights to feature graphics of Tiny Toons, a cuter, big-headed version of the classic Looney Tunes, in 1995, Tazos were a big hit in Mexico, and not long after that, PepsiCo, the parent company of Sabritas, took Tazos to North America, Europe, and Asia. Tazos were given out in crisp packets in the UK via the Walkers brand. Some Tazos had small slits on the side, which allowed you to connect them together so you could make random constructions and play with them in other ways, such as flicking them across the table like tiddlywinks. But I mostly remember kids using them as Pog alternatives. even though there were alternative companies cashing in on the action, most kids knew the game and discs as Pogs. The website, pogunlimited.com, shows the basic rules of play and some bare-bones information regarding the collectibles. It has a pretty clear offer for licensing opportunities, but aside from a Contact Us button, there's only really a few alternative links to their social media pages. Clicking on those reveals their Facebook page, and that doesn't really seem to have much activity, with their last posts being about some sort of reboot in France, although the page itself doesn't get much engagement and the interaction is minimal. Through their Twitter, however, there are links to an alternative webpage called pogdigital.com. Here, it seems, the Pog brand has jumped into NFTs and what looks like a new blockchain development called Pogman's Arcade. Or is it Pogman Battle Game? It's not overly clear. The confusing, jargon-riddled website is full of phrases like NFT economy, blockchain NFT ecosystem, and decentralized NFT minting. The general gist from the information is that you already have to be clued up on these things to fully understand what the new digital product that they're offering is. In layman's terms, the site appears to be offering a POG trading and gaming opportunity on a platform called Fractal, which allows users to trade and play with NFTs, for the NFTs themselves, or for cryptocurrencies. I say good for them for keeping up with the times and continuing the trade and play tradition. I sure hope it works out and brings users a similar sense of joy that I felt a long time ago when I was trading and collecting POGs. It seems that millions of millennials have core memories of POGs, Tazos, and any other milk cap collectibles from the 1990s. And now those very same people can gain a similar sense of nostalgia trading official POG NFTs or playing the game on the new digital platform. You know, it's funny. When I was about the right age for playing POGs, I lived in a house where my parents let me choose my own bedroom floor. I went with this electric blue low-pile carpet that had zigzags of colours, red, yellow, and others. It's hard to picture exactly from memory, but thinking back, it must have been hideous. Isn't it amazing how one thing can spark memories of other things from that time? Like remembering that room and the carpet in the house makes me think of the basketball hoop that I had above the garage door on the driveway. That basketball hoop reminds me of the basketball that I received from Sunny Delight. You know, the drink. It was part of a promotion where you sent off codes that were printed on bottle tops. I think. Wait. Did that even happen? Or is it a false memory? I definitely had a Sunny D portable radio though, and that was in the shape of a basketball, and I know this because I still have it somewhere. Wasn't there a rumour that that drink was banned in some countries because it turned a kid yellow? Now that's what I call nostalgia. You've made it this far, so please do rate the podcast and leave a 5-star review, as well as posting about it and sharing it with your friends and family. Let me know what you think of the show and give me suggestions that you want to hear in future episodes. You can find me via the social media links that can be found in the description, or look up at Vivid Recall on Twitter. Make sure you subscribe and follow the podcast so you don't miss future releases. Here's a taster of what's in store next time. Next time on Vivid Recall. The legends that surrounded them had you thinking, are they real? Are the toys alive? The truth is out there. Described as the most disgusting toy in the world. Some say if you put them back to back, they will mate. But don't squeeze their heads, otherwise they'll die. Do you remember the plastic egg that contained a small, big-headed alien and a lump of sticky goo? This toy was shrouded by urban myths and legends about them not only being alive, but also giving birth. The toys even had members of the public calling the police, and in one case, the toy caused a partial closure of a train station. People called them alien eggs, but they also went by slime aliens. Find out more in the next exciting episode filled with big heads, mating rituals, sticky goo, and plenty of nostalgia. The Vivid Recall podcast was written and produced by me, Andre T. Kemp. If you're looking for more content other than this podcast, then hit up my personal YouTube channel. There you'll see me build some crazy machines, gadgets, and a host of other cool things. Just search Andre T. Kemp in the YouTube search bar. If you're looking for the sources of this episode, all are listed in the description. Plus there you'll find links to some other cool stuff. And I'll see you next time.